It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
This week, my guest is acclaimed singer Jonathan Courant, who brings his celebrated tribute to the legendary Cole Porter to Myron's at the Smith Center June 9th at 7 p.m. Jonathan has built a reputation for his sophisticated style, sharp wit, and deeply emotional interpretations of the Great American Songbook. And in this special performance, Cole Porter and Me, a birthday celebration, he honors one of America's greatest songwriters with classics like Love for Sale, You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To, and So in Love. And what makes this tribute even more personal is that Jonathan and Cole Porter share the same birthday. So giving the show an emotional connection goes far beyond the music. We'll talk about Porter's lasting influence on Broadway and popular music, why these timeless songs still resonate today, and how Jonathan puts his own contemporary stamp on these classics. We'll also discuss his latest single with Diane Schurer called Caught a Touch of Your Love from the album Full Circle, his creative process, and what audiences can expect from this unforgettable evening of music and storytelling in Las Vegas. And for ticket information to Cole Porter and Me, a birthday celebration at the Smith Center, June 9th, go to thesmithcenter.com. And for everything about Jonathan Courant, go to jonathancourant.com. You can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Jonathan, welcome back to the show. I was checking the records and you haven't been on for a while, so I'm delighted you could join us or join me.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Before we get into Cole Porter, let's get into Jonathan. How you went from Fort Smith to New York to Las Vegas, how did that all work out? Give our listeners and viewers a little bit of sense of that.
Yeah, I mean, I was born and raised in Fort Smith, Arkansas. It was a great place to be raised. I had a wonderful family and friends and just a great childhood there. But I was involved with a lot of the local music and theater scenes. So I had been accepted to a school in New York. So a week after graduating high school, I went to Manhattan and stayed there for quite a while. And then a college professor said that I should be in Vegas. So I came out west and actually didn't stay here very long. I ended up in Southern California for quite a few years before really rooting down in Vegas. And it's been a great move. I love the community here, and it's been a good fit for me.
Yeah, you've been part of it for a while. Did the professor that suggested that you do some other things, did he ever see you perform?
Yes.
Yeah. Whether in Las Vegas or elsewhere.
Yeah, he thought I should be, headlining, singing the Great American Songbook, like Tony Bennett or somebody on the Las Vegas Strip. So he said, go west.
Well, no, that's great. How did you get, because this whole show you're doing is about Cole Porter, where did your interest in Cole Porter begin? And of course, the Great American Songbook in a larger canvas in that sense. Did that begin at Fort Smith, or was that once you got to New York, or were you always interested in that genre?
At a very young age, I became very aware and in love with the Great American Songbook. I think I was the only, kid in my junior high class listening to Billie Holiday and Frank Sinatra. I think the Cole Porter music came to me through Ella Fitzgerald's songbook series that she did, and she had a whole album of Cole Porter, and so did Julie London. And so a lot of those came through me through those kind of compilation albums where it would be all Berlin or all Gershwin or, and then having the same birthday with him every year, us singers seem to want to work on our birthdays. So throw a party. So I've always incorporated him and gotten to know him and his work a lot deeper just because of that. Yeah.
When you first got interested in the Great American Songbook by listening to all those different albums with some great singers that you just mentioned, was there something, because I've asked many guests about this, there's something enduring, obviously, about the Great American Songbook, and particularly some composers and writers, But there, it goes from, if you think about it, I mean, this was, these were written in the 20th century, early 20th century, and they still survive to this day, and they prosper with various interpretations, including yours. What is the inherent baseline there that makes so many different artists such as yourself want to do that? In other words, there's something about the lyrics and the music that only, not only does it last over the generations, but also inspire artists to continue their own interpretations.
Yeah, artists of that don't even touch this, you know, they're not jazz artists, they're not, you know, folk artists, country artists. Yeah, so many people come to this work. I think of it, in my opinion, I think of it as America's poetry. I mean, these songs are, you know, very rooted in our American history and our country being a young country. I think that it's very, very American, this music. So maybe there's some kind of historical connection there. But also for me, I love the storytelling in it. I love that it's timeless. It's not trendy. It's real. It's got depth. I just love that aspect of it. I also love the sophistication of it. It makes me feel good. It doesn't feel cheap, like so much music that's made to just hit and be popular for that season, and then everybody forgets about it. Mm-hmm. That's not quality, you know?
And Cole Porter was one of the more sophisticated people in that era that was writing at the time. I mean, there's so many great composers and lyricists, but Cole Porter had this sophistication about him that...
Oh, he had a great way of taking high class and low class and mixing it together. Right. He'd have some beautiful, sophisticated, you know, music and lyrics, but then he'd add some witty raunchiness to it as well. So
yeah, he was very comfortable with all of that, it seems. I'm assuming that you've read a few biographies of Cole Porter just to kind of get you frame right as an artist. Would I be correct or no?
Oh, yeah.
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 Were there some elements that you could see from reading his biography? And there were some sad points, obviously, in terms of his life. But were you able to detect what it was that allowed him to be that creative, to be that sophisticated, as you said, to take the high and low points? Was there something very specific about him in terms of his upbringing or just his approach to life, different as opposed to George and Ira Gershwin and others of that era?
Well, I think he inserted himself into a really interesting group of people. So he was around a lot of wealth, a lot of wealthy Americans and Europeans. So maybe just the circles that he was able to get involved in really helped him to further that and have the luxury of just being able to write and create. Some of his music, though, was banned back then, you know, like Love for Sale. Right. That was totally banned because it was a song about prostitution.
And yet it still survives and prospers, which is to my point earlier that I was asking about that. I like the fact that it's your birthday and Cole Porter's birthday. Is this the first time you've put these two together in terms of a performance?
No, I have done this a few times.
You have done it? Okay, I wasn't aware. That's why I wanted to ask.
And there will be, you know, we're going to start the show with a lot of Cole Porter music, and I've recorded some of these songs. A lot of these arrangements are arrangements I've had written for me. And then we're going to also celebrate by then there will be two new singles out. So we'll be doing those two songs. And then I'm going to just throw in a few crowd pleasers just to make it feel celebratory and all that.
Will there be a cake on stage, Jonathan?
I hope not.
Okay. Talk to Myron and see if you can get a cake on stage. I think that would be great to have as well. When you look at the catalog of Cole Porter's material, what strikes you the more, one for sophistication, so let's do that one, and then one for emotional, if there's one that strikes you both from the, or it could be the same song.
Well, So In Love is a beautifully haunting melody. And it's just beautifully emotioned with love. That one really stands out as just a beautiful emotional piece. I recorded that on my album Shadows Fall with Joshua White. He picked that one actually to do. And I believe we do it in A minor. So it's got a really beautiful, haunting feeling musically. It's just a beautiful piece. Clever. I mean, You're the Top is really, really witty. Love for Sale is very witty. There are so many that just have such clever lyrics to them.
I want to go back to those.
Kind of comical, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go back to those clever lyrics that you just mentioned in that, again, this was written at a time in the 30s and 40s. So it's in the 20th century. So there was a different social milieu at the time. And yet he was able to prosper and write all these sophisticated and interesting lyrics. And looking at it from the perspective of where we are today in the 21st century, it still strikes people. I'm sure that when you have audiences come to your shows, or it's a mixed generational audience. It's not just people that remember him from when they were growing up, but other ages as well. Have you ever talked with people about that as to why that strikes the audience as well, besides yourself? And I know we've touched on it earlier in the conversation, but I just want to get back to that again. Is there something that what strikes the audience when they hear you perform some of these Cole Porter classics, especially from younger generations? What speaks to them about the song or songs?
Well, I think the quality of it that makes it hold up. You know, they were so well written musically and lyrically, that you can also take it and because the song has such a great backbone, you can do it as a bossa nova or as a samba or as a waltz or as a swing or as a ballad, or you can start it like this and then take it over here and then, you know, modulate here and then come back here. You know, I mean, the possibilities are endless because it's such a quality music that you can do so much with it. The younger generations, if they're not, you know, hip to this music, I think if they see the show, I think in my show there's something for everybody because the show has a lot of humanity in it and it's very real. It's happening. You know, it allows us to put our phone down and really enjoy something in the moment.
Do you think it's the fact that we have such, and you'll understand, I think, where I'm coming from, we have such little quality today that people who are not exposed to it can all of a sudden sense it when they're exposed to quality, that it's still so different from what they're usually listening or watching?
I hope so. You know, I hope we're not being dumbed down so much and our attention spans are not being, you know, I mean, we're all subject to it.
So, I'm sorry, what'd you say? I wasn't paying attention.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. But yeah, no,
hopefully they can feel that there is not to sound snooty or anything, but just a different kind of quality to really good stuff.
Right.
It's like a suit. You know, you can order something on Temu, wear it twice and let it fall apart. Or you can invest in a nice piece of clothing and, you know, have it for years to come.
Oh, that makes sense. Which gets us to live performing, which is what you obviously enjoy, as well as recording. And you can find all of that on jonathancorant.com. There's all kinds of information on Jonathan, including all his albums. The aspect of live recording, though, you get a chance to do something you can't do on a recording, which is to connect in real time with an audience. So when you're up there and you're performing, let's say in this case, Cole Porter, very sophisticated lyrics, witty lyrics, you're looking out at the audience. And do you see the audience reacting to the performance, or are you concentrating more on making sure you're performing the way you want it to, the Cole Porter material?
Well, I am aware of what I'm doing, but it's a definite connection. It's a definite conversation with the audience. I can totally, you know, I'm totally there with them. They're there with me. The musicians are, you know, where it's just one big love fest, if you will. But it is definitely a conversation, and I'm totally aware of their energy and the contribution that, you know, the two of us are making. You know, it's not to sound hokey, but it's magic. It's a privilege. It's the thing I love best is hitting the stage and hopefully taking people on a journey and a ride, bringing them, you know, joy, sometimes sadness, sometimes nostalgia, sometimes something totally new, you know, that may be brought to their attention and to mine. So I just love that. I mean, I love being in the studio. I love creating the work and documenting my place in time with albums. But there's nothing like the organic, you know, in the moment thing that happens on stage.
When you talk to people after a show, especially you have your fans and you have people that are coming to see you for the first time, what's the typical reaction of someone who's seen you for the first time after you've performed when they come up to you after the show?
They'll usually let me know that this is their first time coming, but it won't be the last, something like that, you know.
But I mean, did they give a sense to you of they were delighted by your performance and didn't realize what you could do, that type of thing, especially if they haven't seen you perform live? They may know of you, but this is their first live show.
Well, just now at Birdland in New York, somebody came up to me and said, "Golly, I knew you were good, but I had no idea you had such a command, or I had no idea you had such jazz chops, or I had no idea you were so comical on," you know, I add quite a bit of humor into the shows. So sometimes that'll be the response, or sometimes I'll have questions about the material. "Where did you find that song? I've never heard that before. Tell me again who wrote that," or, you know, because I try to give little tidbits of history also in the show.
How important?
I also try to pull out a couple that are, you know, haven't been beat to death. You know, sometimes some more obscure things that are usually a nice surprise.
In terms of the actual narration that you do on stage and your storytelling on stage, that might be a better term, does that also give you a different connection to the audience than the singing part, or is it all kind of all together? Because as you're telling a story, or as you're giving some insight into a song or to a performer, do you find there's even a deeper connection while you're talking versus when you're singing, or is it equal?
Well, if I'm talking about a song coming up, sometimes it gives the listener a different kind of insight to the song that may let them be able to listen a little deeper, or it may perhaps in a different way. And then as far as my just patter, perhaps it allows the audience to get to know me a little better or in a little different way.
And do you change it up depending on the show? So not the show per se, if you're doing Cole Porter, it's obviously related to Cole, but do you extemporize, or is it primarily scripted for you to think, and not scripted as in you're reading a script, but more that you know exactly what you're going to say because you know you want to lead the audience in the direction you want to lead them to, especially a particular song?
You know, there at this point, I know so much about the material usually that I'm going to be performing that, you know, I can tell those stories and they can just kind of roll off my tongue. And if I feel like it's a place where I want to tell one, that then I will. But I don't usually plan a lot of the talking. It just I let it just be natural.
Right. Do you ever get a fan in the audience that's a Cole Porter aficionado and thanks you for presenting Cole Porter in a certain way and giving a little narration in terms of Cole Porter's contribution?
Absolutely. There have been people who have brought me Cole Porter records or books or had different stories about them. And I did this show or something similar. I'm always tweaking things and coming up with new arrangements and things like that. But I did a show similar to this one with a lot of Cole Porter music 4 years ago at Myron's, right around June, sometime around my birthday and his birthday. And his daughter came to the show. So that was really, really special.
Yes, absolutely. Did she share any insight or stories with you afterwards?
She did. She came backstage and we, you know, did photo ops and shared some stories. And she told me about her life and her relationship with her father and some of the memorabilia that she has. And yeah, it was wonderful to have her there.
I would think that would be very meaningful for anybody where you have the daughter or son of a person you're paying a tribute to come to the audience, come to the show.
Yes, yeah,
meet you afterwards.
Especially someone as iconic as Cole Porter.
Yeah. Does she have a feeling she's living in the shadow of her father, or she's her own person and she's quite comfortable with herself, but also understands the impact her father had on the world of music and just the world generally?
Yeah, she definitely understands the impact that he had on popular music of that time and now, you know, the Great American Songbook. I don't know if she felt that she was living in his shadow, but definitely she knew the hugeness of him.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the reason I phrase it that way, Jonathan, is because sometimes the adult children of a famous person are under the shadow. So when they meet people, the person that they meet wants to talk about the father or the mother who's famous, not the person they're meeting.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that's
I totally get that. She did let me know about her life though and what she had done. So
yeah, great.
Yeah. Well,
is there a piece of Cole Porter material that is still out there that nobody knows exists at this point, or most people don't know, whether it's a recorded song or a lyric sheet or something, even perhaps an essay or a book that Cole Porter penned, but nobody knows about it yet because it's somehow either got lost or is in an archive somewhere that no one bothered to look up?
Well, I don't really know, but I'm sure there is. I mean, I'm sure he had scrapbooks of work that, you know, didn't get finished or that didn't come to fruition for some reason. You know, when Johnny Mercer passed away, Ginger Mercer sent an envelope to Barry Manilow of a lot of scraps that were of lyrics that were on his desk. And Barry Manilow worked on that for about 7 years and then had come up with a full album of these unfinished Johnny Mercer works, which they gave to Nancy Wilson. Diane Shears recorded a couple of them too, because Barry Manilow produced one of her records.
Right.
And produced that record for Nancy Wilson of all that work. That album was called With My Lover Beside Me. But I think from that project, I think Barry Manilow has a few that haven't been released or recorded. Yeah.
I asked it in a wrong way, in a sense, because clearly you wouldn't know if something was hidden.
Yeah, I wouldn't. But I bet I could probably, you know, I'm like 99.9% sure that I'm sure there are unfinished works of Cole Porter's out there.
Well, I was saying, because you're in that world, so you would know of a hint of something out there that the rest of us wouldn't know about. That's why I phrased it that way. You mentioned, let's talk a little bit about your album with Diane. Your single is called Caught a Touch of Your Love. And what was that like recording with Diane? She's been on the show, I think, around the same year you came on as a guest the last time. And it was a wonderful conversation that I had with her. She's an interesting lady, and you must really appreciate her even more having worked with her.
Oh, absolutely. We've had a long, close friendship now, and she's been an amazing inspiration and mentor in my life. I can remember being a kid growing up listening to her music. And so then to be, you know, consider her one of my best friends is just kind of amazes me still sometimes. She decided to retire, and that's what morphed this project. I wanted to do something to honor her legacy and body of work, and to honor our close, on a more personal note, to honor our mentorship and friendship that we've shared. So the songs are all songs that she either introduced or had popular recordings of, and I worked closely with the great pianist Tamir Handelman on all the arrangements for this record. Diane Scher and I do I Caught a Touch of Your Love, and then she closes the album alone with probably the most heart-wrenching version of I'll Be Seeing You that I've ever heard. There wasn't a dry eye in the studio when we were recording. But Caught a Touch of Your Love is a song that she originally recorded with the Count Basie Orchestra. It won her second Grammy. And Ray Charles is the person who told her that she should record this song. So when we were thinking of a song for a duet, she said, well, why don't we do Caught a Touch of Your Love as a duet? And I said, all right, let's do it. So that's what we did.
Where was that recorded? In Los Angeles? Or?
Yes.
Okay. And that's going to be, that's coming. Well, it's available now, pre-order, I believe, if you go to Apple Music or other music sites to get that. And we'll play a little of it. And does she, because of her unique abilities, is she able to say to you, Jonathan, on that last note you sang, it's just a slightly off a little bit, or it should be higher, or it should be this, or it should be that. Does she ever do that with you?
No, I mean, she has perfect pitch.
Right.
But no, she hasn't ever corrected me. but I would welcome it if she wanted to.
Well, I was just thinking because she hears so well that.
We will be having lunch and, an exit door will make a beep or something and she'll go, B flat, I'll sneeze and she'll say, oh, Johnny, she calls me Johnny, you just sneezed in, your sneeze was in G. Whatever. So I'm sure that's, that's such a gift, but I wonder if it ever gets on her nerves that she's always hearing things in tones like that.
You might want to take a sedative just to relax after a little bit if you hear things. Well, before I let you go, what would you like people to take away from seeing your performance? It's going to be June 9th again at 7 p.m. at Myron's in Smith Center. Cole Porter and Me, A Birthday Celebration. What would you like people to take away from your performance?
I would like them to come and relax and share joy and share love and forget about everything that's going on out in the world and just, put their phones down and experience something lovely and just hopefully they walk away with a little joy in their heart that they can spread around as well.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Jonathan Courant. He's performing Cole Porter and Me, A Birthday Celebration in Myron's at the Smith Center, June 9th at 7 p.m. For ticket information, go to thesmithcenter.com. For everything about Jonathan, go to jonathancourant.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, X, and YouTube. And don't forget that Jonathan has the new single out, Caught a Touch of Your Love. Jonathan, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
See you next time.
Every time you're near me, my body gets hot. Don't need no doctor, I know what I got.
I caught a touch of your love. It came on overnight. I must have held you too tight last night and caught a touch of your love.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey,